You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or KNE World Network, LLC.
Can you come and save her? Better believe it, get on your knees and pray hard. Then pray hard and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good. And it's so hard to do right when you do wrong, when it turn right, but you turn all the way.
Henshaw, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Welcome to our show. I'm so glad we're all together today, and our guest today is magnificent. I'm so happy to be a part of this show today and happy that all of you are as well. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima, and our guest today is a delight. Would you please introduce yourself to us?
Good morning or afternoon, wherever you may be. My name is Calista Cole. I am Inuit, Yupik, and adopted girl.
I'm so happy you're here. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, it is my pleasure to be with you today.
You are a gifted and talented presenter of your thoughts and of your ideas. And I want to start off today by just giving you the mic. I know you had the opportunity to present recently at a very important conference and so well received. And so I'd like to just give you the mic right now and let you speak from your heart, because I think things you're doing in life will help so many of our friends who listen.
Okay. I will start off by saying that today is a wonderful day for me. This afternoon, I'll be joining the Seattle Public Schools board meeting around a law that I helped get changed. And I want to say that that's what started my journey in advocacy and leadership. However, like, when I look back on my life now that I'm 41 years old, I realized my leadership skills and my advocacy skills started at a very young age when I was experiencing a lot of the things that I did that I never wanted my children to experience. And that's where my advocacy started, because before I became a mom, I advocated for the children I would have. Going through my life of trauma, I had childhood trauma. I went into foster care. I was a homeless teen. I became a pregnant and parenting teen, and I struggled a lot with finding myself and finding my way, finding my journey. But I knew that one of my goals in life was to be a speaker, to be a motivational speaker, I guess, if you will. And when I shared, I'll say when I filled out the form to be a presenter at the 18th annual 2002 Native Women's Leadership Forum, an Endearing Spirit honoring luncheon held by Native Action Network, I did not believe that I would be able to be accepted. Because there are still these points in my belief system that have self-doubt, and I don't believe that I'm good enough. So those are things that I really struggle with. However, I had people say, hey, do it. You're great. You have a strong voice. And so I did it. And when I got asked to be a presenter, I was so happy and so nervous and so scared and so busy already being a mom and having a full-time job and having to write down what I was going to say. And I did. I sat down one day, probably 3 days before I presented, and I just typed up something, and I was like, oh, that's long enough. The night before I presented, I was in my hotel room. I had had dinner with some other Native and Indigenous sisters, and they hyped me up. And I'll say, I went back to my room to practice my speech, and I read it. I was presenting for an hour and 15 minutes, and I read it, and I timed myself, and it was only 14 minutes long. And I was so tired and so nervous. I didn't know what I was going to do, so I wrote a couple notes. I woke up early the next morning. I wrote some notes about things that I would say. And then when I finally got in that room and I started speaking, it just came out naturally. And so parts of that, what I wanted, what my goal was to share my story and my journey, but also in such a way that I empower others, because it does not matter where we come from or the things that we've endured or the doubt that we have within ourselves. If we surround ourselves with the right people and the right community, we can achieve so many things that are beyond our comprehension. So I started my speech with acknowledging that, you know, you may cry, and if you don't, I will. That's okay. So when I presented, I talked about my journey with my son, and I've brought it up before when I spoke with you a few times about my 19-year-old son who left this land from homicide, and I've struggled with that. So I'm going to hold on to that truth and that honesty right now, because the past few months I've heard a lot of, you need to let your son go, and I have let him go. I've let him be at peace, but I also hold on to the truth that I'm still here, and I have to acknowledge those feelings so that I can find my peace through it. And sometimes we don't realize that when someone is hurting, especially when it comes to the death of a child, we're carrying a really heavy load while we are parenting other children, and we see other children in the world, and we see, you know, young men or young adults, and we know that our child should have had an opportunity to be there. With all that said, I will say that because of that, I have found my strength to fight for something in the state of Washington that I felt was necessary to fight for when my son's high school transcript revealed that he was missing high school credits from the ninth grade, and he was a young man with an IEP and a student with disabilities, and he struggled. And so when I went to the school district and I asked them about, you know, giving him an honorary diploma, they said, well, we can't do that because the law doesn't say we can, but the law doesn't say we can't either. However, I did present to them that there was another student in another school district whose family was given an honorary diploma the year he would have graduated, and he never stepped foot in high school. He didn't earn one high school credit. And so to look at that story in the newspaper from a different school district and go to the school district my son was in and say, hey, the state failed him. He had a right by law to a fair education, and he didn't get that. And they called it a clerical error. I was really, really upset about that. And so that started my journey to do something about that, because they said, when the law changes, we will give you his diploma. And I said, okay. And I did. I fought for the past probably three and a half years to get a law changed to allow families to receive their child's honorary diploma. And it doesn't matter how many high school credits they receive. And I'm very proud of that, and I'm very honored by that. But I also want to acknowledge that everything that we do as parents, as aunties, as uncles, as relatives in our community, our children are watching. Everybody around us is watching. And I didn't realize that in the moment when I was doing all of this work until that law passed and my children were in the grocery store with me, and they were so proud. And they're like, my mom changed the law. And they were so happy. And then my 17-year-old daughter, there was an issue at her school, and she called me and said, Mom, I'm going to be loud today. And I said, do you be loud? It doesn't matter if I agree with it or not. I support you because I know what you stand for. And I felt this power in her voice when she said, my mom changed the law. There is nothing I cannot do. And I reflected on that. I reflected on the amazing things that we do as parents. As small as they feel to us, they are so huge to our children. I also talked at that conference about knowing when to take your seat. As Indigenous women specifically is who I was talking to, we have to know when to take our seat, and we also have to know when to get up from the table, mm-hmm. because we're no longer welcome there. That's something that I've struggled with myself, is, you know, finding my place, finding my way. When I worked at my last organization, I advocated for my community. I worked in a program that served BIPOC community members, and I was specifically for the Indigenous community, and I would advocate for things, and I didn't feel heard. And it didn't seem like they understood that. And then I started to feel like I started to feel as if I needed to be grateful that my manager pushed for me to get that position. She was a part of a program that I was in some of the early stages of my growth and development as a parent. And she knew so much about me because they had to discuss the caseloads in staff meetings. And I started to feel really uncomfortable because there was language used that made it sound like she was better than me or she was above me. And in leadership, we cannot lead others by making them feel smaller than us. True leadership is seeing the greatness in others, seeing the unique gifts that they bring to the table and their unique voice, and honoring that and respecting that, and asking yourself as a leader, how can I use this person's gift to help our program be great? I feel like oftentimes people get into leadership positions before they're ready. And I say that as someone who's been called a leader so many times, they're like, I am not ready to be in leadership. And so many people say you have a strong voice, you have a powerful story, you've done these amazing things. And what holds me back from that is that I don't feel like I'm ready because I don't have an educational background. Again, I came from a very traumatic background, and because of trauma, I wasn't able to go to school. I don't have a degree, and that holds me back. However, yesterday there was a job posted, and I shared it on my Facebook. And I looked at the job description because I'm always curious. I'm always looking because we never know. And the link wasn't working, so I messaged the person who had posted and said, hey, the link isn't working. And she said, okay, well, we'll try it again because I think I fixed it. And so I did, and I looked, and so the job description downloaded. And she's like, okay, thank you, and go for it. And I'm like, I don't think that I'm qualified for it. She said, don't speak that negative talk. She said, you don't say you're not qualified. You let them tell you you're not qualified. And that was so beautiful to me. Because she doesn't know my full story, and she doesn't know my educational background. She doesn't know if I hold a degree or not. And this was like, it's an executive director position. I'm like, I don't know. But she said, go for it. And my children came home, and I told my daughter about that. And she's like, do it. Like, do it. And I'm like, well, geez. I say all that because I'm all over the place in my head right now. Trying to figure out what I'm talking about, because there's so much to say about leadership and finding our way. And I think the main point is that when we begin to empower others and not look at what we consider weaknesses, which in my point of view, I consider that just colonized mentality. Because we are taught to tear each other down, and we are taught to talk down to others, because that comes from colonization and how we were nothing to them. We were nothing to the settlers. We were beneath them, but we were enslaved, and we were not worthy. And I think that it's time that we start to reflect on how we see others and how we treat others and how we talk to each other, and realize that that comes from that colonizer mindset that you're not good enough. But who's to say we're not good enough? What makes my story and my life and my trauma mean that I'm not good enough to succeed in this world? What is the definition of that?
Wow.
And I want other women specifically, and other men too, to realize that just because we come from these things doesn't mean we're not worthy. Doesn't mean that we don't deserve a good life. It doesn't mean that our children don't deserve things, because they do. And it is unfortunate that some of us have to fight harder to give our children better. Than others, because they had a healthy background and they had, you know, healthy parents and they were given an opportunity. I wasn't given an opportunity until I was in my 30s, and that is really sad to me. Not because I didn't deserve it, but because that's the world I was born into. That's the world I was given. And I have fought to change that. I have only been back in the workforce for about 2 years. And in those 2 years, I have a senator as a professional and personal reference. And that is amazing to me. And that right there.
Wow.
I want people to know that it does not matter where you come from. It matters where you're going and what you do with the idea of who you want to be now. And under a certain level, yes, all those things matter because you didn't deserve it. You did not deserve that life. You did not deserve that pain. You did not deserve that hurt. You did not deserve that trauma. You didn't deserve to be torn down. And yes, so those things do matter, but they don't determine who you are. They don't determine your greatness and your strength and your amazing personality and your amazing skills. Like, we get so many life skills from all of the trauma that we endure, and it shouldn't be that way. However, it's how it is, you know. If I was watching my story in a movie, I would be amazed. But because I'm living that story, it just feels like something I have to do. It feels as natural and normal as grocery shopping or filling up the gas tank, because it's just the right thing to do sometimes. And I will say that while I have been, this is what, my fifth time on your show, I think. I have changed a lot. I'm attending school board meetings. I have this amazing story. I'll say I'm still struggling. I'm still struggling. I still live in a house that is way too small for me and my family. And I struggle to keep gas in my car. And those are the realities, because I want people to realize I'm still human. But because I have these things, and I say that because when I was younger, I used to think that if you were friends with a senator, you had to be rich. You had to be wealthy. You had to be somebody that was of importance in I can't remember the word for it, but in this level of society, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm not, you know, and so I want that hopefully to inspire others to say, you know, we can do what it is that we need to do. And it's a lot of hard work. I'll say that having to fight for a law just so that I could get my son's diploma was absolutely unfair. It took away from my grief. It took away from me being a parent. It took away from my healing, which is something I'm constantly going to be doing. I'm constantly going to be healing and holding on to this knowledge that, you know, it should not have come down to this. And I remember they told me that if my son was alive, then we had legal rights to do something about it. But because he's no longer here, that I was the one that had to do the work. I was the one that had to fight through my grief, through my pain, through my loss, while still being a mom, while still working, while still being a positive member of society. I feel like that was so unfair to me. And a lot of times when we have to fight for things, just to get justice, just to get equity, it is absolutely unfair.
Mm-hmm.
And we still do it. And I'm not complaining, but I'm saying it was unfair. But I did it. And I think that sometimes that is a determining factor between the victim state of mind and survivor state of mind, is that we can choose to let this break us or help us.
You are a brave and courageous person. You are a talented and gifted person. And you are a fabulous mother. Thank you. Thank you for doing this great thing as a mother, as an advocate, as a woman, as a native, as a real human being. Will you tell us now about Everton's Law?
Yes, I will. Everton's Law is a law. So there is an original law in there's an original law that allows for a certain group of people to be able to get a posthumous diploma. And that certain group of people are those who dropped out of high school or left high school. I won't say dropped out of high school, but they left high school to serve in the Army. And so if they did that, they can come back and get a posthumous diploma through their high school. Or if they passed away during war, that they will be, you know, honored and receive a posthumous diploma. However, when I went to the school and asked for an honorary diploma, they said that in order to receive a posthumous or honorary diploma, your son would have needed to have reached his full high school credits before passing away. And I said, okay. And at first I accepted that. I was like, okay, because he thought that he was over 5 credits to graduation. And then I got his transcript. They gave me his transcript and a recognition, a letter of, I can't remember what that was called. And I looked at his transcript and I realized there was a high school missing off of his transcript. And so I contacted that school for his transcript and I took it back to the school he was attending. And I said, this needs to be corrected. He, by my calculation, he was only 2.38 high school credits from graduation and he never knew that. And they looked it up and they adjusted it and fixed it. And I said, okay, now I really want his diploma because this was a failure in his education. And they said, no, this is a clerical error. And I'm like, no, it's not. So they said, well, here's the law. And this is what it says, that he, you know, he had to have reached his full high school credits, but the law does not say that. The original law didn't say that, but the original law did say that those who dropped out of high school to serve in the Army qualify. And so I had looked up other articles and found other districts that did produce honorary diplomas for students without reaching their full high school credit. They said, you have to change this law. So I made a lot of phone calls and there was a man, like, there were so many emails and phone calls and people were just like, well, there's nothing we can do. And then I called Olympia and I can't remember which department. And there was a young man who answered the phone and he was like, oh, well, this sounds really interesting. And let me look into it. His name was Parker Teed. And, I stayed in contact with him. He called me and we would email back and forth, and Senator Claire Wilson heard about it, and she picked it up, and she's like, "Oh, I'm interested in this, and I think this is good. We need to do this." And so it was introduced into the Senate, and then the pandemic hit, and it ran out of time to be heard, and because the pandemic took a lot of that time and having to, you know, change things and work on the emergency situation, which I completely understand. And then I think it was 2001, it was reintroduced into the Senate, and there was some, at first the law was going to be that you had to reach 75% credits, and then in the final law, it says that any student between the 9th and 12th grade can qualify for an honorary diploma, which means if your child enters the 9th grade during the summertime and they're going into the 9th grade and there's an accident or there's something that happens, they still qualify. It's important because while the original law says it's for men who leave high school and go to war, it's important because our youth, especially our youth of color, especially our indigenous and black students, are living in a war every single day.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to gun violence, when it comes to mental health concerns and untreated and unhelped mental health, we have a high suicide rate in our indigenous and black students. And as hard as it is to hear, this is a reality. This is a reality for parents. And so I don't want to sugarcoat anything, because we are the parents that have to live every single day without our children because these things do happen. It was important that the law be in place because we wake up every day as parents from early childhood. Their whole childhood, we're waking them up, getting them up for school, making sure their grades are good, making sure their mental health is as good mm-hmm. as we can, while working, trying to make sure that they're fed and well and are having a good education, advocating for them every day from the age of 4 to 5 years old. They're in school until they graduate around 17, 18 years. So it's important that our communities and our school districts acknowledge our children, acknowledge them, because us as the parents, we're left behind.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to work in our communities. We have to be the cashiers, the bank tellers, the early childhood educators, the counselors, the drivers, whatever it is that our job description is. We do that every single day with a good heart and a stable mind, even though we wake up without our child. And that's why it's important for our districts to honor us and our children. It is small for some people, but it is so huge to a parent
mm-hmm.
to be able to see that diploma, because that is one of their very first milestones in life. We celebrate every year the graduates in our high schools, and we go into the grocery store, we see the graduation cakes and the balloons everywhere. You see all this graduation stuff. So there is not one parent out there in this world that has lost a child that does not see those things and know that their child should have lived to graduate. It should have been here. It hurts. It hurts every single day. And that's why it's important, because our communities should at least be saying, I see you, Mom. I see you, Dad. I see your family, and you deserve this piece of paper to hang on your wall, to honor your child every single day, because I know that it still hurts. Instead of dismissing them, they say, no child left behind. The law was named after my son because Claire Wilson knew my story, and she said, I'm going to make sure it is named after your son. And I was honored. And my son's name was Everton. It is Everton. And the fact that this law is named after him is a great reflection of the reason why I named him Everton. I named him Everton because Everton is Native spelt backwards. And I never wanted him to forget who he was or where he came from. And I want anybody and everybody that hears about Everton's Law to understand we should never forget where we come from. Everton's Law has a deeper meaning for me, because I was a child that came from childhood trauma, because I am Native, that the intergenerational trauma that runs through our DNA is a determining factor for why this law was in place. Had all these things not been in place, had not all these turns of events, with trauma and being let down and not being not given a life I deserved. I wasn't able to give him the life he deserved in the beginning stage of his life as a 17-year-old mom who didn't have any support, who was in a domestic violence relationship with his father. I struggled. And all I knew was I loved this baby. I loved this child. And I was going to learn. I was going to learn to be a good mom. So Everton's Law is an important factor so that hopefully when it is mentioned, we do not forget that we have a lot of healing to do in our communities and in ourselves, for ourselves and for our children, because the next generation depends on us.
Mado Mahe, a big thank you for sharing this amazing and enlightening story from your heart. When we come back, we'll find much more out about your wonderful heart and your wonderful work. We'll be right back.
Can you come and save her? Better believe they get on their knees and pray hard. They pray hard and never look back. Once the world forgets you.
The hardest thing to do at times is to make changes in your routine. Don't let that hold you back.
Wait a minute! They told us we had it all, Jordan. Well, yeah. Guess in a way we are running out of all.
I'm Rhett.
I'm Tia.
And I'm Heather.
And we are three. Voices.
You want this drama over here? It's clear. You got Gilbert over here. You got LeBron over here. And guess what? We talking about
it. I'm trying to get over the dog whistle politics thing because I can't hear it and dogs are supposed to hear it. So who hears the dog whistle?
Your opportunity is now to get up-to-the-minute information, great entertainment, and stimulating talk programs on your computer. Yes, I said your computer. Just log on to TalkTainmentRadio.com. Click Listen Live to hear a program. The blogs and podcasts are up and running. TalkTainmentRadio.com can also be heard on your cell phone.
Yes, I said cell phone.
TalkTainment Radio. We go where you go.
Here's an idea. You've heard of the notion of pay it forward. It comes from the 2000 movie Pay It Forward. Basically, the premise is helping someone with no expectations of payback, providing assistance to someone, passing information on, simply doing a good deed for a total stranger, and instead of allowing them to pay it back, ask them to pay it forward. Doing favors for other people and asking them to do the same. The principle is the same as multi-level marketing, except that instead of soap or vitamins, it's generosity between strangers that is being passed on. Pay It Forward is mentoring, it's volunteering in your community, it's shoveling a neighbor's snow, or cutting an elderly person's grass for them, or taking a senior to the store. Don't wait for someone else to do something good. Do it yourself. It starts with you. Talktainment Radio strongly embraces the notion of pay it forward. In fact, we just did.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run without scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Your daughter doesn't want to talk about why her room is a horrible mess. Your son doesn't want to talk about why he's wearing mismatching socks. Your spouse doesn't want to talk about their bad haircut. Families don't have to talk about everything. but they should talk to plan for an emergency. Pack basic supplies in a go bag, water, canned food, flashlights, batteries, medical supplies, IDs, and some cash. Talk about where you'll meet in case you lose one another. And of course, don't forget to pack the dog treats. Talk to your family and make an emergency plan. Go to nyc.gov/readyny or call 311 to make your family's emergency plan. Brought to you by New York City Emergency Management and the Ad Council.
The COVID-19 vaccines can be our chance to get back to our plans, who we are, what we miss, to get back to each other, to life. But it's okay to have questions like, how were the vaccines tested? In rigorous clinical trials among adults of diverse backgrounds. Can the vaccines give you COVID-19? You cannot get COVID-19 from a vaccine. Why should I get vaccinated? Protecting yourself also helps protect the people around you. Find the latest information at getvaccineanswers.org.
Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
Pray within. the mouth you eat, and the love we breathe, and the cup we drink, and the tongue we speak, and you see them die. So tell me why, won't you come and breathe in? And you come and save her. Better believe it, get on your knees and pray hard. Then pray hard, it never looked bad. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good. And it's so hard to do right when you do wrong, when it turn right, but you turn all the way left.
I deeply believe that the gifts and the call of God are without reproach. And motherhood is sacred. It is a call and a vocation. And once you are a mother, you are always a mother. You may add grandmother or great-grandmother or auntie or something else, but you are always a mother. And we have a tremendous mother with us today. Would you reintroduce yourself to us, please?
Yes, my name is Calista Cole. I am Inuit, Yupik, and adopted Crow. And today I'm here representing being a mom.
Well, we don't do this usually, but I want to do this today. We don't want you struggling. We don't want you suffering in any way. So if you have a Cash App or a Venmo or a PayPal that you want to share, we have listeners all over the world who have generous hearts. And if you want to share that with us, feel free to do that.
Okay. I can. That is a very generous offer. Honestly, it's, wow. Okay. It's, Calista 23. I think that's how you say it, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, this is Calista 23.
Well, all of the things that you are doing in the world, we are so thankful that you're willing to do them. And I hope someone has said thank you for that, but I will say thank you to you for the work that you're doing, especially the work to help others. And I would love it if you would help mothers right now. We have mothers all over the world. We have a lot of homeschoolers who listen, and their mothers listen too. We have mothers going through all kinds of things. You know, we heard from some moms today that are going through a hurricane, and we heard from some others that don't have water to drink in the city where they live. And mothers are going through a lot. And so I want to hand you the mic one more time and ask you to speak directly to our mothers who are listening right now, please.
Okay, I will. And I'm going to try really hard not to cry, because everything that I say, I feel like I'm saying to myself as well. So I can relate to those moments where you don't know if you're ever going to get out of it. Those moments where you are so tired and overwhelmed and exhausted that you just don't want to cook dinner. You don't want to fix a snack. You don't want to do this. I've had moments like that before. Like, I don't want to do this. Those are real. Those are real thoughts. And it doesn't mean that we are going to give up. It just means we're having a moment where we feel like it. And I think that that's okay. And, something my cousin told me a long time ago when I was struggling with the pain of not having my son with me. She said, you get 15 minutes to cry. Cry, blow your eyes out, and then you get up. So you allow yourself 15 minutes, and then you have to boss up. And I do that. I do that. I've chosen to cry and let it out. And I'm like, okay, I'm giving myself 15 minutes. And ever since I started doing that, I realized I'm only giving myself 5 minutes. Because after 5 minutes, I'm like, okay, it's time to boss up. I got stuff to do. I got children. And so I still got 10 minutes left to save. And so it adds up. So just add that to your moment bank. Because our children have their moment. And they cry. And they get tired. And they get cranky. And they get demanding. And then let's not mention they become teenagers and the hormone changes, like they're toddlers all over again. So, Mom, you deserve your moments, too. You deserve your moments to say, I just need a minute. and you can go in the bathroom and close the door and cry. Get in the shower and cry. Put your babies to bed and then cry. And don't be afraid to let them see you cry. My children have seen my tears so many times. And they hug me and they ask me if I'm okay. And I say, yes, I'm just really exhausted. I'm really tired. And I wish I could give you better. You will be surprised at the response that you get when you are humble and honest with your babies. I will say, I'll tell you about this time, because I'm a single mom, four children. We don't have grandparents. We don't have aunts, uncles. They don't have their dad. I was telling my son, he is my only son outside of the one who is no longer on this land. I said, I wish you guys had your dad. I wish you guys had a healthy dad. And he said, it's okay. You're enough. And that made me feel so good to know that my children, or my son at least, sees me in this light that I don't see myself. And so please, mamas, know that your babies see you in this light that you could never imagine seeing yourself in. I still can't. My 17-year-old is so amazing, and she's like a little cheerleader. And I'm like, geez, I have done a lot of good work. Like, I didn't imagine I would raise such an amazing child from the stuff that I've been through.
Mm-hmm.
However, they see us, and they know us, and they know our heartbeats, and they are the ones that know our souls, and we know their souls. And so allow yourself those moments. And if you are too tired to do things, just be in the moment with them. Sometimes laying down and watching TV, or laying down and letting them read the book or talk to me, it's that connection that we have with them that is the most important.
That's gorgeous. That's just amazing. I mean, it's just wonderful to hear you say this, and to say this in such a good way. When you think about what you would like for perhaps mothers who are just starting out on the motherhood journey, you know, mothers maybe of young children, what would you like to give them as wisdom that maybe you wish you had known, or you've learned along the way?
You don't have to be perfect.
Yeah.
You don't have to be perfect. It is amazing how much pressure we put on ourselves in those early stages of motherhood. Don't compare yourself to other parents. Those babies are going to crawl when they're ready to crawl, and they're going to talk when they're ready to talk. And they are just exploring their world. They are developing and they are growing. And one of the most important things that we can give them in those early stages of life is attachment, healthy attachment, the eye contact, the communication skills. And my early childhood education brain wants to say that tummy time is really important too. Tummy time is important. Like, I learned something in a training and I was like, wow, I never knew that. But that tummy time helps build their core muscles, so they have good strength in writing when they go into kindergarten. So I want to point that out. But mostly it's about that attachment. I know that in my life and my journey as a parent, I realized that when I was not acknowledging, or when I hadn't healed from trauma, that the trauma that I had endured caused some moments where I didn't have that healthy attachment. And then I realized that, hey, I need to take a step back, and I need to not be stressed out about time and dishes and clothes, and I just need to be in the moment with my baby right now. But I'm telling you, those dishes and that laundry, that's going to be there. It's always going to be there. But your baby is growing and developing in every single moment they are with you. And so those moments are the most important. That laundry and dishes is not the most important. It's your baby and those moments you have with them. So do as much as you can, and don't try to be perfect right now. Nobody expects you to be perfect. And if they do, they need to go talk to a professional about why they expect you to be perfect. I say that because my mother had those high expectations of me, and it felt awful. And I'm like, Mm-hmm. But are you offering to help do the dishes?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Our pediatrician told us at one point, he said, you know, we can fix any mistake you make, except we can't fix you not loving your child.
Right.
But so if you, you know, if you do everything wrong and you have a loving, strong bond of attachment, we can work with any mistake that you make. So make that your priority.
Absolutely.
And I think I see you teaching mothers, you're uplifting the community, you're being a blessing to children, you're taking care of your own children, and you're doing so many great things. And I want to make sure, you know, that your dreams come true, too. And you said one of your dreams was to be a public speaker or to be able to share your heart with other people in that way. We have friends who listen all over the world. We do. You know, all 50 states, 160 countries. And they have events. They need speakers. They need people to share. And I want to make sure that when they think of those people, that you're one of those people that comes to their mind. So how could folks contact you? How could folks, I don't know, get a hold of you, support what you're doing?
It's funny. I just had a meeting yesterday with someone, and she was like, well, what are you going to do? So what are the three steps you're going to take to get to that goal? And I was I don't know. And she said, start a website. And so she just mentioned it yesterday, so I haven't created that yet, but I do have my public Facebook. It's Clista Cole. I also have an email address. It's c.cole.redberrywoman@gmail.com. And that's my email address, and then my public Facebook. I have two Facebooks. I do have a private one, and I have my public one. But that, I think the public one pops up more for everybody because it is open. That's like my work Facebook. That's where I post all my perinatal stuff and inspirational stuff. So I think that should be easy for me to find me there. I'm also on Instagram, Yupik Mom. But again, that's my private Instagram usually. I post all kinds of crazy stuff because I'm all over the place. So if you do follow me on Instagram, do it at your own risk. Eventually, I will have one for my public speaking and things like that because I really have this goal to develop that more. I want to be able to afford to have that quality time with my children and not worry so much about my life.
Well, we want your dreams to come true, and it's so important. We want you to have the life that you want, even as you want your children to have a great and wonderful life. I am so thankful that you joined us today. This conversation was truly important. I know it can't have been easy to have, but I appreciate your graciousness and your generous heart in sharing with our listeners today.
It was an honor and a privilege, and I will say I wasn't prepared as much as I wanted to be, but I do hope that my desire for being a leading example of what leadership really looks like by inspiring others came through, and I do hope that, you know, moms don't forget that it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. And again, if you're looking for a speaker, if you're looking for a guest for something that you're doing to share, give us your email one more time, will you please?
All lowercase letters, c.cole.redberrywoman@gmail.com.
Perfect. Thank you once again for joining us today. I am so honored that you were here to share your story.
I am. It's always an honor to be with you, and I appreciate you having me. Thank you so much.
Thank you to all of our friends, the networks that make this show possible, our donors and sponsors, and most of all of you who take some time out of your day to spend it with us. We know you could be doing anything, anywhere, and it's not lost on us that you choose to be with us for Conversation with Dawn Karima. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and I'll see you next time. She's silent, it's getting older.
got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.